This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, the Competition Amendment Act was signed into law yesterday, and it marks an historic occasion that I sincerely hope we don't end up regretting, though I fear we might. The Act's aim is to open up new opportunities for many South Africans to enter various sectors of the economy and compete on an equal footing. And the sentiment is certainly the spirit throughout the Act and the draft regulations that are undergoing an extensive comment process at the moment that we haven't seen the final versions. The Act requires that the Minister make regulations in relation to the new provisions that restrict purchases by firms considered dominant in designated sectors, the buyer power provisions. But as I said, the draft regulations have yet to be signed into law. As far as I understand, there is still some confusion about, so we'll try and get some clarity on it. I'm joined now by competition law doyen Heather Irvin, director at Falcon and Hume Inc. Attorneys. Great to see you again, Heather.
Yes, you too, Michael.
Competition law on Valentine's Day. Well, let's talk about it. They might be investigating some of the chocolate suppliers soon. Who knows? One of the major changes introduced by the amendments are that small and medium-sized businesses and firms controlled by historically disadvantaged South Africans enjoy protection against price discrimination and unfair purchasing practices by dominant firms. And it's a big part of why the legislation came into being. What does that mean in practice, though? What will an aggrieved firm have to demonstrate to prove price discrimination or unfair purchasing practices?
Well, you'll effectively have to show that you, the little guy, have paid a price which is much more or not as good as a much larger buyer, and that that price has inhibited you from being able to effectively participate in your market. So if you think about the classic case of price discrimination involving Sasol and creosote, it's essentially if that little buyer was paying for creosote a price which was so disadvantageous that he wasn't actually able to compete in the pole market, that would give rise to a complaint.
But what about economies of scale? If I'm a large buyer, I can argue with a potential supplier that because I'm bringing such a large contract to the table, I warrant a discount or a good price.
Well, that door's now closed to you, Michael, because there's a specific section which says the only things you can rely on are differences in the places to which the goods or products are going, or the methods in which they're going. So if you're buying big canisters as opposed to smaller canisters, that might count. Or if you're delivering to the factory gate or you're taking delivery at your premises, then you might argue there are delivery costs involved. But otherwise, the pricing should not be of such a large difference that it actually inhibits your ability to compete.
So that's price discrimination. Unfair purchasing practices? What are deemed unfair?
Yeah, so that's a very difficult question to answer. That's a separate provision which says that when you buy from someone as a large concern, you can't squeeze them unduly on the price that you pay or the terms that you offer. So a good example of an unfair term might be is if you say to a very small supplier, you have to give me a very protracted credit period, otherwise I'm simply not going to buy from you. That would probably be deemed to be unfair.
We'll pay you in 120 days. Well, if you deal with government, if you get paid at all sometimes, it's pretty good. There are a whole lot of other provisions that unfortunately we don't have time to go through all of them. I want to touch on some high-level issues. How is this going to impact, and you raised the question on your Twitter profile the other day, ongoing merger investigations, because there's almost a parallel process here.
That's right. So there are these new foreign acquiring firm review by a committee that has yet to be set up. I think until this committee is constituted, it's not going to affect merger filings that have been put in. But one of these days when the committee is constituted and there are regulations published, it may well start to impact on mergers that have been filed.
And you also posed an interesting question about when this will actually come into effect, the law, because it's been signed, but it hasn't yet been enacted.
No, that's right. So we're waiting for a proclamation which says that it comes into effect. And there is some precedent for bits of the Act being put into place, but not others. So it may be staggered. We might, for example, see the prohibitions on dominant firms coming into effect first, and then the foreign acquiring firms bits later. That would enable a bit more time to put together regulations that are needed to make the mechanics of the Act work.
Any indications, though, as to what Mr. Minister Ibrahim Patel is thinking along these lines? I mean, it doesn't help that we have to scratch our heads at this.
No, it's creating some uncertainty, and uncertainty creates anxiety, and anxiety spooks investors. There's no doubt about that. The workshops on the buyer power and price discrimination regulations are currently underway, and I think those will be finalised relatively soon. But the foreign acquiring firm regulations are actually something that the president has to do, unless he delegates it to someone else. And I think the president has his hands pretty full at the moment. So I think we might see a postponement in that, but the minister hasn't made a formal announcement.
There are a whole range of existing market inquiries underway as well. How are they going to be impacted?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, Michael, because I think once the Act comes into effect, if that proclamation is actually published, the Commission will get all of the powers that the new market inquiry provision gives him. And then I think some of those market inquiries that are currently underway, for example, in healthcare or in public transport, might well find themselves being investigated under a whole new range of powers that the Commission suddenly has.
That seems to be throwing an awful lot of resources after resources that have already been, expended in a department or in a competition authority that is running low on financial resources.
That's quite true. And I think there are real anxieties about the effect that this legislation is going to have on the Commission. They are under-resourced. They've said as much themselves. And so I think there's going to be some significant capacity building required on the Commission side before this legislation can really be enforced effectively.
If you're a large-ish firm now, what would you be advising firms to do in terms of going through their competition procedures and manuals and training to get up to speed?
Yeah, start preparing. You have to update your training. You have to update manuals. And if you're planning on a merger, you need to assume if it's going to happen in the next year or so that some of these provisions might apply to you, and you need to tailor your timetable appropriately.
Do you think this will have a dampening effect on mergers and acquisitions, considering all of the uncertainty still?
Michael, I think it depends. If it's sensibly implemented by the competition authorities themselves, by the president and by this committee, then no. I think it's perfectly possible to bring this act into effect in a sensible and efficient manner, but it's going to take a lot of work and coordination by all of those bodies.
Well, lots to think about. Heather Irvine of Falcom Hume Inc. attorneys on the recently signed into law Competition Amendment Act. We're still waiting for that proclamation, and lots to consider for an economy that is trying to roll out the welcome mat to investors. I certainly have more questions than answers.